Welcome into a Sunday night edition of the Locked On Nets podcast, inspired by a Shams Charania report that the Nets have been very active on the trade market. We are hosting a special potential trades edition of the Locked On Nets podcast and recapping their final preseason game against the hated New York Knicks. Next on the Locked On Nets podcast.
You are Locked On Nets, your daily Brooklyn Nets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
You are Locked On Nets. I am your host, Gavin Scholl. After 4 years covering the Phoenix Suns, I moved back to my native New York to cover your Brooklyn Nets and talk about potential trades the two teams could have, because that is where we start off today. First, some housekeeping. I am solo on this one, you can tell, because Josh hasn't rudely interrupted one of my convoluted intros yet. He decided going to the Jets game and watching them somehow score 42 points and going to a concert tonight was more important than recording this podcast. I don't know. I frankly can't believe it either. But for all you Josh heads out there, however inexplicable your existence is, he will be back on the podcast next week, possibly as soon as tomorrow. So don't fret on that front. I wasn't initially going to record today. There just wasn't that much going on. I kind of wanted to do a podcast on Friday's Nets-Knicks game, but they're just, like, not that much happened. Like, the Nets played well. We'll get into a little bit in the third segment, but I don't know. I didn't think it was worthy of a podcast. What I do think is worthy of a podcast is the report from the Athletics, Shams Charania. Probably getting his name wrong, but you know he's, like, my age, right? It makes me feel like such a fucking loser. The fact that he is doing what he's doing at the same age. He's like built relationships with agents, breaking news constantly, battling with Woj. Really puts the 30-year-olds to shame. Like I'm 23 and I am just crushed by that. But could you imagine just that kid just destroying you on whatever beat you're on? Just wild stuff. So shout out to Shams, now and always. He reported in his Brooklyn Nets season preview, I don't know, I assume it's a report. I feel like anything that comes out of his mouth is a report. That the Nets have been very active in trade discussions, and now that obviously doesn't necessarily mean they're close to a deal. Sean Marks has proven time and time again that he'd rather be proactive than reactive, so I'd expect that it's probably a fair descriptor to say the Nets are always somewhat active on the trade market, but this did get the gears in my brain turning a little bit. And I was like, all right, what trades could the Nets potentially be pursuing? And the one I want to spend the next couple minutes talking about is the Nets potentially trading for Spencer Dinwiddie. And obviously, unless you live under a rock, you would know that the Suns fired Ryan McDonough. They did it. They just flat out fired him. And I don't know. I guess I don't need to spend a ton of time on this. I got to know him quite a bit during my time in Phoenix. I thought really good guy. Obviously made some terrible moves. Obviously made some outstanding moves, like getting Devin Booker outside the top 10, drafting TJ Warren late in the draft. Seems like he made the right pick with Ayton this past year. But that's neither here nor there. What is here or there for the Nets is that allegedly part of the motivation for this firing was terrible owner Robert Sarver's insistence on the Suns, a team that under no conditions is going to be exceptionally competitive this season, go out and trade for a point guard. And this is obviously pertinent to the Nets because one of the top point guards theoretically available on the trade market is my guy and yours, Spencer Dinwiddie. So I wanted to get into this and see like how feasible a potential trade would be and who the Nets could potentially get. If you want a little more on this, I'd highly recommend you go back a week or two, listen to our crossover with Locked On Suns, Brandon Clean. I thought he had some really good thoughts on this topic. But yeah, I think it's worth talking about again, given the reports that the Nets have been active and the Suns are just desperately looking for a point guard. You put two and two together and you imagine something could be on the table. And by all accounts, the Suns haven't really gotten a lot of traction in their pursuit. So I can't say this is something that's close to happen, but you got to imagine those conversations are ongoing. So what would Phoenix potentially give up? I think the best possible case for Brooklyn would be getting a protected first-round pick from Phoenix. And on the surface, I don't think they'd do this. Under Ryan McDonough, I think they would never, ever, ever do this because he obviously values draft picks so highly. But with a front office in turmoil and an interim GM in James Jones who was playing 2 years ago, I really think there is a window to take advantage, because it's pretty obvious, given that situation and how kind of tenuous that front office is right now. I believe Sarver is running the show, and it's clear he's in the mood to make a rash decision and maybe give up a little bit too much for a quality point guard. And I think that could be a first-round pick. And now, I don't think things are so bad in Phoenix that you'd get that first-round pick without heavy protections on it. But if the Suns are willing to give you a top 5 to 7 protected first-round pick, maybe you bank on them just giving that to you this year, and you somehow end up with like the 6th, 7th, 8th pick in the draft this season. Or you wait till next year, where Phoenix, they might continue to improve, but the West is so loaded, it's still kind of hard to imagine them making the playoffs even 2 years down the road, and you end up with a lottery pick for Spencer Dinwiddie, who, again, is very, very good, looks good this preseason. I have zero issue with Brooklyn keeping him. I love watching him, so that might even be my preference. But if you can get that type of asset for a guy at a position where you have D'Angelo Russell, who, again, just the preseason, like, we won't know anything until the games are played, but is looking increasingly like he could be the long-term solution at point guard, and a backup in Shabazz Napier, who has a long track record of reliability. I don't know. I think just in terms of value, I would take that deal if I were Brooklyn, and that's something that they're going to have to heavily think about if Phoenix is willing to put that on the table. And maybe the Suns play hardball. Maybe they decide to get someone more like Milos Teodosic or Patrick Beverley, but I'd keep my options open in regard to potentially getting a first-round pick from Phoenix if I was Brooklyn. Other options, maybe someone like TJ Warren. I don't necessarily think Brooklyn would do that trade. I think Dinwiddie and Warren are pretty similar in value. If I had to pick, I'd say Dinwiddie, especially at his current money, is more valuable, certainly this season. Though Warren is on a fairly affordable contract going forward, and who knows how much Dinwiddie gets paid this offseason. But I think that's maybe an option for Brooklyn if they decide they want more perimeter scoring punch. And Warren, I think from day one, you could make a pretty compelling argument that along with D'Lo, he's the most intuitive scorer on the Nets roster. And again, not really a Brooklyn-style player. Like, he allegedly has improved his jump shot this offseason, but has never shown off a competent three-pointer in the NBA. But really just an assassin from the mid-range, very, very good around the basket. In fact, one of the best perimeters in the league, perimeter players in the league at finishing around the hoop, and still relatively young. So I think he'd be an interesting guy for Brooklyn to go after. And I like the idea of a team that shoots all three-pointers, incorporating one guy with a bit of a mid-range game. You saw it last year, obviously, on a much higher level in both respects in Houston with Chris Paul coming there. The middle of the floor is wide open because the game plan against Houston, and I would say at this point against Brooklyn, it's just you cover the three-point line, you cover the rim, you give up anything in between, because their coaches essentially tell players just not to take those shots unless they are wide, wide open and the shot clock is running down. And having a guy like Warren in the Nets offense would be pretty interesting, because I think he could consistently take advantage of that fact. And I could legitimately, this sounds insane to anyone who hasn't watched Suns basketball the last few years, but I could see him becoming a consistent 20 points a game guy for the Nets. And you could certainly make the argument, just because he's not extraordinarily efficient, because he doesn't shoot the three-pointer, he's not really a great passer at this point, nothing special defensively, that the overall value is just not there to give up a guy in Spencer Dinwiddie, who was arguably your best player from last season. But I don't know, I think that's potentially fascinating. Final name I'll throw out there is Eli Okobo. The Suns, I think he was taken with the first pick of the second round, but he's a guy a lot of people, including me and Josh, really, really like around the league. You heard us mention his name in our pre-draft coverage of the Brooklyn Nets, and he did nothing to dissuade me of that opinion in either Summer League or the preseason. Very intuitive. Looks like he's going to have a good jump shot down the road. Does a nice job getting to the rim. Really smart passer. He actually reminds me of Dinwiddie in a lot of ways. I think he's like 3-4 inches shorter, but he's a nice player. And if you're the Nets and you want to trade, certainly not an aging asset in Dinwiddie, but kind of get a younger version of him, maybe in Okobo, if the guy hits a ceiling, that's kind of interesting. And maybe the Suns throw in a second-round pick, maybe give you a little bit more salary cap relief, take back someone like Allen Crabbe in that scenario. All right, that wraps up this first segment of Locked On Nets. The last two are not going to be as long. We went a little bit far on this, but I just thought it's an interesting hypothetical. So we'll be back next on Locked On Nets, talking about other players on the Nets roster that they could potentially deal. Locked On NFL is becoming everyone's favorite daily national NFL podcast. Mondays, it's the local experts on the biggest stories of the week. Tuesdays, former NFL QB Sage Rosenfels joins Matt Williamson. Wednesday, it is Mike Renner of Pro Football Focus. Thursdays, it is the great Mike Sando of ESPN. And Friday, get Matt's picks only on Locked On NFL.
All right, welcome back to the Locked On Nets podcast. We mentioned last segment the report from Shams that the Nets are in trade talks, and my assumption would be that the primary team they are talking to and the primary deal they are talking about is Spencer Dinwiddie maybe going to Phoenix. But there are quite a few other guys on the Nets roster who look somewhat tradable, and I want to get into that. My number one guy on that list is Damari Carroll, and he obviously only played the first preseason game. I've said this a million times on the podcast. I'll say it a million more times. By advanced analytics, and you could argue to some degree the eye test, at different points of last season, Damari Carroll was the Nets' most valuable player and was really one of the greatest reclamation projects Kenny Atkinson had last season, a guy that they got a first-round pick to take on, and he turned into an extremely essential part of this team. That being said, I'm not sure if he's long for this Nets world we all dwell in. And that's due to Jared Dudley looking competent at power forward, making smart passes, shooting the ball, I think, at a higher level than Carroll did at just about any point last season. And Rodions Kurucs, by the way, it is apparently, it's not, I was saying Kurucs, I think. It is Kurucs. That's how he likes to say it. It's Kurucs. Rodions Kurucs. All right, now that we've gotten that established, he looks like a legitimate rotation guy, and that was not a scenario I imagined. I thought, if anything, it would be John and Musa, who popped in the preseason and maybe created a little bit of an opening there, but Kurucs just looks physically ready to go, I think, in a way that no one really expected of him. He's smart enough to play right away. I think he's good enough defensively to play right away, and again, it's harder to tell in the preseason because every team is putting out sub-NBA-level guys, or at least sub-NBA-level rotation guys out there, but he's just been competitive every single time he's on the floor. I'd be interested if you threw him up against a Paul George type right now, whether he would get utterly dominated. The answer is probably yes, but I just think, given the Nets' aims this season, they can afford a small upgrade down from Damari Carroll, particularly since it allows them to get off his money, with guys like Jared Dudley and Rodions Kurucs in his place playing that small ball four spot. And then you also have a guy in Travion Graham, who Kenny Atkinson appears to like quite a bit and gives you some two-way value as a 3-and-D guy, very similar to the same mold that provided Damari Carroll so much success last season. So you have a couple different options at that spot. And I think that makes it very reasonable to trade Carroll. And I don't think Atkinson is going to trade him just to trade him. But if you think you can get a high second-round pick for him, you think you can get some young prospect, that could be something down the road. I'm not quite sure what team necessarily would be interested in Carroll, just because he logically, like, the type of team you would trade him for is a contender, but his contract might be too expensive for a contender to afford. But maybe you find a deal somewhere in there. I think it'd be really funny if they just sent him back to Toronto. Not that I think that's exceptionally likely. So his contract makes it tough, and the fact that the Nets aren't going to get equal value for him makes it tough. But I just think there is an opening there to trade someone like Carroll, and I wouldn't be incredibly shocked or disappointed even if they only got like a second round pick for him. I just think that's something that could happen this year. So I wanted to make everyone aware of that. The other guy I will mention is Allen Crabb. And he's obviously a little bit of a tougher case, just because you don't really know how far along he is as a player. And again, on teams other than the Nets, I would say, all right, just look at last season and that'll give you a reasonable expectation of what he's going to do this season. But given the Nets, again, impressive track record in player development, I think there is a scenario where he makes a big jump this year. Obviously, this time, his first full offseason in Brooklyn, and that's been shown time and time again to really shift how guys play. And he could be a much more complete version of the guy we saw last season. His one preseason game, not very impressive, but again, it was just such a small sample size that I think Brooklyn is going to want to see him play 20 games, or even more likely, they kind of already know what to expect from him, and either they're really impressed with the steps he took this offseason, or they weren't, and in the second scenario where they weren't, I could see him being very much on the trading block. I've made the case before, I'll make it again, I just think Joe Harris is a better all-around player, and again, you have guys like Kurucs and Travion Graham filling that spot in the rotation, and that's kind of the beautiful thing for the Nets right now. They have so much wing depth they're extremely flexible in guys that they could fit into trades if that comes up. And again, Crabbe, kind of similar to Carroll, the issue with trading him is I'm not sure if he's as valuable to any other team in the NBA as he is to the Nets, particularly given the amount of money he's making, and I don't think you get a first-round pick for him. But maybe someone like the Atlanta Hawks, or the Nets just pulled off a deal with, like Crabbe's potential, much like Brooklyn did, and Crabbe as a developmental piece and a guy who could provide some scoring for them this season is a little bit more intriguing. And obviously, Atlanta's primary goal is to tank. They want to play a lot of young guys, but maybe they see Crabbe as someone who could be a part of their future. And the beautiful thing about Crabbe is even though he's making a lot of money now, his contract is up in two seasons. And Atlanta, by the time they had a window of contention, which I think is at least 2, 3, 4 seasons down the road, they can renegotiate with Crabbe, give him a little bit less money, and he could just be a really nice shooter for them. So maybe they see some value there, and maybe the Nets get a high second-round pick out of it. All right, that's it for the second segment of Locked On Nets. We'll come back, give some thoughts on Nets-Knicks from last week, and then tee you off for Tuesday's podcast next on Locked On Nets.
Locked On NBA never went away, and it's still here for you every day. Locked On NBA is your daily national NBA podcast. Every Monday, get the local experts on the biggest stories and then stay with Locked On NBA all week long with daily 30-minute episodes on everything going on in the league. Follow for free at Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On NBA.
All right, third and final segment on the Locked On Nets podcast. It's going to be a relatively quick one, just some brief thoughts on the Knicks-Nets game. First of all, love Spencer Dinwiddie's attitude. They showed some more of his exclusive summertime interview with Michael Grady, and he was just kind of relitigating the whole Twitter war with Enes Kanter, and I thought the whole thing was so stupid. Like, this is coming from a Knicks fan. I think Dinwiddie's clearly in the right. Like, there's absolutely no reason the Knicks should be close to as good as the Nets this season, and I guess maybe that's a stupid statement in and of itself when I have the Nets winning somewhere around 33, 34 games this year. But I think the Nets will be competitive night in and night out. I think they will beat some teams they shouldn't. I think the Knicks, conversely, will be one of the 3 or 4 worst teams in the NBA. So I think Dinwiddie was totally in his right to send that tweet out initially, and I think that was just Kanter being Kanter going after him for it. All right, favorite thing to come out of this game, and it's not like a new thing. I think I said it after the Pistons game as well, or maybe even after the Raptors game. But I just love the potential of the D'Angelo Russell, Jared Allen pick and roll. If you can go back this far, early last season, we were really hyping up D'Lo and Mozgov. And that is really the ultimate testament to D'Angelo Russell as a pick and roll point guard, that he made Timofey Mozgov relatively effective on the play. There just aren't too many guys in the league who could do that. And we were talking about Tyler Zeller as this massive upgrade over Mozgov, which was true. But you could say that same gargantuan leap has happened from Zeller to the current version of Jared Allen that we have. And obviously we got to see a little bit of it last season, but I don't think either guy was at full stride at that point in the year. And now you have an extra season for Allen, who looks, if anything, more athletic, stronger, quicker off his feet, cutting to the basket. And D'Lo, I legitimately think, just in terms of his ability to pace, install, and keep guys on his butt, one of the better pick-and-roll point guards in the NBA. So I expect that combination to be totally deadly. And then you add into the element that you have these excellent weak side shooters in Joe Harris and Jared Dudley in the starting lineup the Nets had out there against the Knicks. And it gets really, really exciting because you just can't leave those guys. And if you do leave those guys, then to stop Allen from just dunking it, because if you don't help off it, that's what's going to happen almost every time. Allen's just going to have a dunk. You're giving slightly contested threes to arguably two of the better three-point shooters in the NBA, and maybe it's a little antiquated to put Dudley into that mold, because obviously there are other reasons he can't stay out on the court all the time. But if you're going to play Dudley, he can really shoot at a high rate, and he's shown that this whole preseason. Harris has largely been cold, but I think he definitively proved last year to be one of the better shooters from behind the arc in the entire NBA. And then you have a secondary ball handler like Caris LeVert in there as your fifth guy. So, like, worst case scenario, you're kicking it back out to him against a scrambling defense that has no idea where to go, and LeVert can attack the basket. And that makes me think the Nets starters can be really, really competitive on offense when I have to go back and look at the metrics from last year. But at least just purely based off memory, I think the benches in general were the more effective units for the Nets, and they would really create large discrepancies in the scoring. That's what would keep Brooklyn in games. But this year, if you have your starters really, really dominating offensively and you have a much improved bench, and guys you can play for larger minutes and guys that aren't going to really break down consistently in one way or another. I just think it's really indicative of a Brooklyn team that could just be significantly better this season. And I don't want to overstate that because I feel like in some ways the East as a whole got better. The West as a whole got better. It feels like everyone's loaded. It feels like everyone's optimistic in this preseason. But I just think that element is suggestive of a Brooklyn team that can be, if not very good, potentially in the playoff mix in this 2018-19 season. That's pretty much everything I had on the Nets. Caris LeVert, really good game shooting the ball. His interior passing remains ridiculous. He had like a three-play sequence where he had two threes in a row, then broke into the lane, had a double pump, no-look pass to Allen, and it's just scary how good he is at manipulating defenses, and he just fully utilizes his athleticism. You always hear in the NBA, don't jump when you make a pass. Don't jump when you make a pass. It's going to end badly. LeVert is better than almost anyone else in the league at that particular skill. He works it to perfection, even if fundamentally it's not necessarily the best thing to do. Continue to love Rodion's Karutz. I talked a little bit about that last segment, so I won't get into it too much here, but I do think he's going to find a way to work himself into this rotation at some point during the season. Spencer Dinwiddie, I just think he looks a little bit stronger this year, and obviously that was a big emphasis on our end. We were really looking at Spencer and hoping that he could do that, because I just think it's going to make his success a little bit more sustainable next season, not to mention it'll make him better around the basket, where he was already very good last year, and I think that is going to be the case, because he certainly has shown off an ability this preseason to take a little bit more contact and finish through it. One Knicks note for all you closeted Knicks fans listening to this. I know you're out there. You don't have to hide. Come out to the world. I'm open about it. Anyways, shout out to Frank Ntilikina and Mitchell Robinson pick and rolls on the other end. I just think both those guys are super young. I think they're technically maybe both still teenagers. Is 19 a teenager? I don't know. But I think they're going to be really, really good for a really long time. Mitchell Robinson in particular is just a freak with his length, his ability around the basket. Like, I don't think he necessarily has Jared Allen's footwork, and I don't know if he has his touch, but just in terms of jumping and catching and shot blocking, I think he's even a step better than Allen, and Allen is really, really good at those things. So I'm excited about Mitchell Robinson. All right, that'll wrap up this quote-unquote Nets podcast. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. Josh and I will come back tomorrow, and I'm excited to make this an annual tradition. It's going to be one of my favorite shows we do all year. We're just going to have some big predictions for the next season. You can call them prop bets, you can call them predictions, but just little micro things we think are going to happen next year. Most of them are going to be positive because it's the preseason, and that's our attitude right now. Hope you all had a great weekend. We'll be back with you Tuesday with Locked On Nets.